It's all based upon smoke-filled rooms, compromises, tears, laughter, hatred, money, sex, death and violence, and sausages.
Hello and welcome to The Dirt. I am Tim Wright, and today I'm here with Steve Hickey.
Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And I'm also here with very special guest, Bruce Lawson. Bruce is an open standards advocate at Opera. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is amazing. We have Bruce Lawson on the show.
Yeah, we're really happy to have you here.
We've made the big time. This is it for us. We're probably going to shut it down after this show.
Yeah, no more episodes. You heard it here first.
We may not even release it.
Sorry, guys. It's the death of your show.
That's one way to look at it.
So this is part three in our series about open source, and we wanted to talk to Bruce about the open web because he's been such an advocate for a very long time, and It's a central topic for us. We think it's a really great way to end the series, right?
Yeah, no, this is great. We're always banging on the drum of keep things open. So that's I don't know where that came from, Tim.
Yeah, good contribution, Steve. That's really great. So, Bruce, just for some people who I don't know who wouldn't know this, but can you just give us a rundown of what exactly open standards mean in your world?
Sure, it's related to open source, but it's not open source. It is about using standards for storage and data interchange that anybody can use. So it's not there's no royalties attached. It's not proprietary. It's not secret. It's open and kind of connected with that, but not necessarily vital to it. But connected with it is these standards tend to be made in public by a group of people. So with the web, it's things like HTML, CSS, which are made by a consortium, which consists of, you know, various competing companies and interested companies and individuals. That's the best way to describe it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I've always, when I try to explain to people what I do when I talk about web standards, I always refer them to the analogy of the shower curtain and shower curtain rings. When you go to to Target or wherever, I don't know if I don't even know if Target's in the UK. Are they?
We know what it is. It's like Walmart.
Yes. Yes.
Nastier or nicer, depending.
So when you go to a department store and you're going to buy a shower curtain, you pick up a shower curtain, like, this is a nice shower curtain, and then you go to buy shower curtain rings. You don't have to sit there and count the number of holes in the shower curtain and then compare it to the number of shower curtain rings, because you know that that industry has standardized something, and the amount of holes in the shower curtain are going to match the number of rings. And that's how I explain web standards to people.
I've actually never thought about counting the number. It just always has been correct to the point where I've never considered that.
Because it's a standard.
That's weird. That I would think they would screw that up immediately.
I bet they did in the beginning, though, like we did with the web. But I'm sure, Bruce, you remember when the times we were just doing anything we wanted. I remember instead of using headings for a little while, we were just like divs with classes and everything. And we're kind of even going back to that now for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really nice to see the progression of standardization in the web.
It was helpful for me learning. I came in on the tail end of that, and people were just starting to really aggressively say, you know what, stop using tables, start using CSS, do this in a standard way. So it was very helpful to learn, knowing that there was a right way to do things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also, I think, a natural process in the evolution or the growing up of a discipline or an industry. I was reading last week, actually, because I'm so rock and roll, I was reading a PDF of the 1908 meeting of piano roll manufacturers in Buffalo, in which they decided whether to have 9 or 8 holes per inch on a piano roll in a hotel in Buffalo. And bizarrely, although it was written in, you know, Edwardian English about a dead technology, the different arguments that the different manufacturers were advancing were identical to the different arguments that Apple and Opera and Microsoft and Chrome, etc., advanced today about different tech, but it's the same arguments. Our way's best. Our way's best. Well, fuck you, because our way's the market leader, and we're not going to change.
Yeah. So argument was just as civilized then as it is now.
Well, it was kind of, you know, pre the varlet, fuck you. But yeah, it was kind of...
Maybe a little wittier.
yeah, and a lot more long-winded with top hats. But yeah.
So we do see this sort of like standardization, and then things become accepted best practice for example, like open universal access and accessibility, and then some people come in and they're not educated in those best practices, and we have to do. I'm seeing a lot of course correction in things like, I'm going to pick at Bootstrap because it's fresh in my head, but. When Bootstrap first came out, or the concept of MVP in general, sometimes these best practices fall to the wayside. Bruce, I'm wondering if you think that is an education issue, or if it's like a byproduct of the process of trying to get things out quickly, and some of these things that are supposed to be standardized just kind of aren't seen as important. Does that make sense?
It does. It's a good question, and one I've been thinking about lately and haven't really, resolved it yet. But I think there's an education issue as well, obviously. But there's something else, is that everybody thinks his or her new project is the first time this has ever been done, and they are a special case and therefore exempt from every other rule that everybody else has to follow. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a... It reminds me of, you know, when my wife phones up and says, I'm going to be late because I'm stuck in traffic. And, you know, actually, you are traffic. It's just you only ever think of yourself as the exception.
God, you just damaged my worldview.
Sorry, man. It's a British courtesy to the Americans. Everybody thinks that my project is super, super urgent and I do not have to care about the browser that you use, because it works on the browser I use. And I guess it's kind of human nature as well with universal access. Is if you're in your mid-20s with perfect vision, etc., and able-bodied, you're not very interested in thinking about somebody with a disability or who is blind or who has to use the keyboard. And we all do that, you know. That's not. I'm not sitting here like the Pope accusing other people of moral failures. Well, I am sitting here like the Pope because I'm on a chair, and the Pope presumably uses a chair. But you know what?
Get you a hat to match.
I have a mohawk, sir. I don't want to. When one has a mohawk, one does not conceal the mohawk. it is an education thing, but also the web does evolve, and sometimes the best practices get left behind, or the standards actually don't evolve as fast as people need them to. And we saw that with HTML4, and it's one of the reasons why we've been working so hard to get HTML5 out of the door, because it has to retrospectively standardize stuff that we were all doing anyway. We live in a very fast-moving world, and we live in a delightfully fast-moving industry, and because everybody has to sit down and agree and discuss and talk, often the standards don't move at the speed we need them to, and that's okay.
It almost seems like a cycle of diverge and then converge to me. Like something new comes out, and we all fuck it up for a while, and in the process of messing it up, we learn what it should be and how to improve it and how to use it properly. And then everybody starts to converge back around using the standards for that again. And then something new comes along and we just repeat.
As my daughter would say, totes.
But yeah, I was having a conversation with somebody at Google a while ago about accessibility in Google Docs. And they're talking about how checkboxes are made in Google Docs, and there's all these ARIA roles being thrown on there, and just to do something special with design, I'm like, why don't you just use a checkbox?
Yeah,
like you get all that stuff for free. And it was a design communication issue, but I mean, it brings up a point of what Steve was saying. When new things that are not standardized get built, I think a lot of that stuff that you get for free in a checkbox, for example, you don't think about that you have to actually write that in JavaScript or something to make it accessible or something.
I would argue there's a certain amount of health to this cycle in that we learn to appreciate the good things about the basic, simple, open way of doing stuff, that we go, we mess stuff up for a while. There might be something in there worthwhile that we learn and can bring back to the standards eventually. But mostly we just sort of learn, oh, this is really stupidly difficult for no real reason. Let's just do this the simple way. It's kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, he's seeing that at the moment with web components, and I've just been having a worry about the accessibility of web components. Mm-hmm. There's nothing inherently about the technology that's inaccessible. In fact, they have the potential to make everything more accessible, but it's an education issue.
Yeah.
You know, with a web component, instead of rewriting a checkbox from scratch, you can say input type equals checkbox. Is equals my super checkbox, and the web component will extend the checkbox. Yeah. It will inherit all of the default behaviors. You know, the fact that you can hit the space bar to fill it in, the fact that it has a role and a state that you don't have to automatically add because that's given to you as part of the checkbox. But then your JavaScript can make it look lovely, turn it into corporate purple and orange. And, you know, instead of a tick, it could be like, I don't know.
Middle finger.
A middle finger or a goblin with his head cut off and his legs sawn off. You know, whatever. I don't advise dead goblins, by the way. It can be off-putting, I find. But if you wanted to, you could. But if you don't have JavaScript or if your browser doesn't do web components, then it's just a good old-fashioned checkbox. Right. Yeah. It still is usable. So this is good, and that's exactly what you said. It's that healthy cycle of saying, okay, we've done it the wrong way, but we do know what we want to achieve. Now let's rediscover the good things that we threw out and enhance them.
You know, we have an apprentice program here at our company, and we go through this with a lot of our apprentices where they come in here and they want to do really cool, interesting, slick things. And they end up writing this garbage HTML and tons of JavaScript to do something. And then they struggle with it for weeks. And finally, the final implementation ends up going back to the standard way of doing something. It's like, oh, wow, that actually achieves what I was after really well. We just sort of backed off all this garbage and did it right.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing because I get to break their hearts.
Yeah, Tim enjoys breaking apprentices.
But I think you bring up a good point about, you know, we're really talking about graceful degradation and progressive enhancement. And we can grow responsibly in these new features, you know, extending some of the base language a little bit instead of rewriting it completely.
Yeah. And I think seeing that, like, div is equals my super checkbox, and then we are sitting here feeling like garbage, and then eventually somebody gets to the point where they back down to input type equals checkbox is equals my super checkbox. It's really validating when somebody finally gets there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the trouble is, you know, this industry being what it is, like any industry, new and sexy and shiny and paradigm shifting, is kind of inevitably more exciting and interesting to write blog posts about, to speak at conferences about, than here's an incremental improvement. You know, incremental improvement is washing powder, whereas new and sexy is like a great big box of fabulous cocaine, and it's obvious which one people are interested in. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, you know, boringly, curmudgeonly saying, what about doing it the right way, guys? That's basically my job, to be boring, curmudgeon old bloke. What about doing it right?
Yeah, well, does the right way support Angular? How can I do this in Angular?
Angular 2.0, yeah. I forget.
Yeah, Angular strap and mustache and trouser press, yeah.
It's like, I haven't been doing this job for terribly long, but I feel like I'm starting to be the same way, where I'm just keep on hammering at the new people. Like, no, just calm down. Do it this way. It's cool. It's fine. It's simple. It's easy. Everything will be okay.
Well, you know, the reason I do it is because I'm fundamentally lazy, and I can't be bothered to learn Ember, and then by the time I've learned it, you know, everybody laugh at me at parties and go, Ember? It's Angular. That's the cool one. And then I learn Angular, and like ladies mock me in the street. Children avoid me because, don't you know, it's, you know, it's like rhododendron.js is the latest great thing. So to avoid this constant cycle of being mocked and disappointed, I just learn HTML, CSS, mm-hmm. and JavaScript.
I agree.
It's such constructive laziness, though. Well-informed laziness.
There's nothing wrong in laziness because it gives you more time to drink beer.
Exactly.
See, swear dance.
I would call it a maturity in the industry to where you see these things come in constantly, and you can kind of identify which ones are going to be around for a while. Mm-hmm. When I saw responsive design come in, I was a big progressive enhancement guy, and I'm like, okay, wow, that fits right at this progressive enhancement layer. That's going to be around for a while. I'm going to learn the crap out of that. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. when I see something, some JavaScript framework come in, I see, like, you know what? We have front-end development principles that I see as very important, progressive enhancement, universal access, all this stuff. And these new things coming in do not adhere to that. And it's at a point, it's maybe I'm being too rigid, but the time after time, you see these things come in that don't adhere to those principles, and they just fall away.
Yeah. And I'm a middle-aged guy, and I don't have a great deal of time left, and I don't refuse to learn loads of frameworks. Mm-hmm. That was cheerful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right.
So as an open standards advocate, what are some of the issues that you see come up over and over again? I know we've been talking about some of them already, but is there something that you just like really struggle with trying to get people to get?
It's the meta issues. I mean, there are issues like what's the difference in HTML's article and section, but the mm-hmm. the real meta issues are those things of I'm 25 and I can read 9-point gray type on a white background, and I'm not selfish or evil, but I'm just not able to think about how it feels if you are a blind person who has to use a keyboard. It just mm-hmm. it's too alien for me to think about because I haven't had the life experience. It's something I see a lot, mm-hmm. and the inevitable pursuit of the shiny and new and the cool, and we're all guilty of it because we all, you know, we all click on links about paradigm shifts, and we all want to be invited to conferences to speak about cool stuff, and I know I do, but sometimes it is important to say, you know, just because it's new and cool doesn't necessarily mean the way you've always done it is entirely crap.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And I don't.
We shouldn't think be scared of the shiny and new. We should just evaluate cautiously, I think.
Exactly, yeah. or totes.
Totes indeed.
Yeah.
So why do you think this stuff is super important? The open web in general, like why is it? Let's say I'm brand new to this stuff, and I'm coming out of one of these startup academies, and they taught me Rails, or they taught me something in a JavaScript framework, and something, and maybe I missed the beginning stages of this. Why is it important for that person to know about the open web and open standards and, you know, best practice?
Maybe when you broadcast this, you can dub in some stirring string music now, because I'm just about to get on my soapbox.
I can handle that.
Yeah, we can do that.
Excellent. But for me, and this is me personally, and the reason I do this is that the web is without a doubt the biggest platform we have for communication now. Anybody can make a website still. Almost anybody can receive a website. And I just genuinely believe that it's the best mechanism we have of ensuring or preserving, you know, liberty, democracy, humanitarian values. I can write a website and a woman in Nepal in a mountain, a guy in Sierra Leone, you in the US, somebody in Australia on a $2,000 laptop or a $40 feature phone can all talk to each other. And I think that is so new and so revolutionary that it needs preserving.
Fuck yeah. That's why I love this job.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
have to protect it from the corporate overlords.
If now you can turn off the stirring music and play like some noises of people counting coins, if that didn't inspire the Rails guy that you were talking to, I'd say open standards is just better business as well.
I agree. No, we've seen people try and close off the web, and currently, in the past. Also, like Flash was one of like basically a black hole. Mm-hmm. iOS and Android, I think, are examples. Not closing off the web, but they're closing off they have these little ecosystems.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're over time. I don't know that which is going to win. I think the web is going to win personally.
Yeah, it always comes back to.
I mean, if Steve Jobs was around, maybe not.
Let's not go into that.
I hope the web will win. I don't think it's not a foregone conclusion,
mm-hmm.
Because there are gigantic vested interests in making the web a sort of little backwater where you go to do weird stuff, but making sure that your phone, your lockdown phone, which you rent rather than own because you can't install what you want. And you have lots of apps running on it, and every in-app purchase sends 30% back to the people who made your phone. I mean, not the Chinese people in the factory, obviously, but the people who designed it in the US. Yeah, there are big entrenched business interests, and it's easy to see what those interests are. Equally, the rest of us need to work hard to preserve the good things about the open web, and then both things can coexist. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I would like to see apps die. I don't want to see apps die. I just want to see the web healthy.
I mean, apps are part of the internet. They're just a different endpoint. That's all.
Mm. You know, my favorite part about these apps is I kind of see them as a beta tester platform for the features for the web. Mm-hmm. You know, they have all this device access that we're starting to see happen. Eke over to the web. The very first one, I think, would be geolocation. That was a while ago. But, we're seeing things with Boot2Gecko and the device API where we're getting access to ambient light sensors, the vibration, network information, all this stuff that the native devices, or native applications already have. And they're using it. They're testing it out. They're telling us what people want, what people don't want, how to use this stuff. And we're just like, thanks for testing all that shit out. Now I'm going to really use it.
We'll take it from here, boys.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. In the same way that Flash was a bridging technology.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that we at Opera started the work that eventually became HTML5 was we were scared of Silverlight and Flash because it had features that the open web didn't. You're absolutely right. There's things in the apps can do that the web until recently couldn't. My friend Patrick Lauker always has a nice slide when he does a talk, and instead of there's an app for that, he crosses out app and he writes there's an API for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is, and proprietary ecosystems can move faster, so there'll always be the next new thing, and then the web will catch up. And we won't necessarily mimic everything. In iOS 8, in the health kits, has an API to detect whether the temperature was taken in the rectum. I don't think that I know of no work in the W3C to mimic that API. I could be wrong, of course.
Certainly nobody's working on it in the open.
No. It's
gross.
it could be a kind of a backroom project.
Backdoor deal.
Yeah.
Well, we have such a great culture of openness and sharing in this community. I think it's great. You know, people like you, Bruce, who who are speaking at conferences and about being an advocate for openness and web standards and everything, I think is amazing. You know, we do it to some extent on this show to our limited audience, but Bruce, where do you think we're moving forward from here with the web? You think web components are going to screw us up entirely? They'll be rejected. You think we're going to go in a completely different way? How do you see us? I don't know. Maybe this time next year, we'll probably be in the same spot having the same discussions, but in the future, where do you think we're headed?
I think the future generally looks bright, actually. In the standards world, we're moving towards a model which is being called the extensible web. And the idea I was asked at the weekend, and I kind of clarified it on the fly at this interview in Madrid. Instead of building a big feature, the next big features will be small features. So instead of developers waiting for ages for something like app cache to be specified, and then waiting for ages for app cache to be implemented by the browsers, and then discovering that it didn't actually do the job we wanted, what we're trying to do as browser manufacturers and standards people is give small, powerful primitives upon which developers can build. Because you can implement those faster. Nuts and bolts are more useful to engineers than black boxes, generally. And then people can build the stuff they actually need. And because the community has been really great at sharing techniques, sticking code on, you know, public repos and forking stuff or contributing is a better way to put it. I hope that in a year's time we'll start to see good libraries built on top of service workers and the Fetch API and all of these nuts and bolts that are being exposed now, and a corpus of best practice being generated by the community will start to evolve, I would imagine. And I think that's better because I used to be a developer, but now I'm a standards advocate. The guys who write the specs used to be developers, but now they're spec writers. And the people who really drive the web forward are the web developers. And so far, they haven't really had that big a voice, and that needs to change. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see a little bit of that now with the Responsive Images community group.
Quite.
And the picture element got pushed through. It's getting pushed through Blink right now.
Yeah, that's been really exciting to see.
Yeah, I was lucky to be a part of that. But the guys Tab and Yao and Matt Marquis are just really cranking away, and they put out a great polyfill, the picture fill.
Yeah.
And they're starting to work on element queries now, which is really exciting. And yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of great. Do you think all these new features are going to be polyfilled, or do you think they're going to degrade? Are just going to plan for them to degrade gracefully?
I hope it's the latter, degrade gracefully. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm heavily invested in the picture element because I proposed it in November 2011, although it needed cleverer people like Matt and Tab and Marcos Caceres and Simon Peters and all the guys who actually did the real work to make it happen, and then Yoav. And of course, that was crowdfunded by the community. That was a watershed moment, I think, in developers actually saying, this is a problem, let's fix it, let's collaborate and work together. And it's in Blink and Opera, in Chrome and Opera, and will be in Firefox really soon.
Yeah, that's really cool to see that. It was so exciting that we came together and said, you know, we want this, let's just make it happen.
And of course, in Safari and Internet Explorer, you just get a non-responsive image, but that's fine because that's what you've had all along. Nobody gets a worse experience, and some people get a better experience, and that's progressive enhancement built in.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Safari's been pissing me off lately. I've been working with the WebP images, And there's just, they just don't work in Safari. Just, it's just ridiculous. Just,
you get nothing, or
you get nothing.
No,
it doesn't work.
No,
I mean, I expect that sort of behavior from Internet Explorer, not from Safari. I'm very disappointed.
It's actually kind of weird. The Internet Explorer teams and the Safari teams have been kind of swapping place lately. Is what it feels like to me.
Yep. Yep.
I couldn't possibly comment. Having friends on both teams. Mm.
I'm sure that nobody's trying to do bad things. It's just the progress we see seems like it's in a different direction now. It's interesting, though. It's interesting.
Yeah. You know, you can solve the WebP problem with responsive images, though.
Yes, yes. I actually wrote I'll share it. I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, I took a couple hours and put together some assets to make it degrade gracefully and everything. It's very nice. Anyway, Bruce, we're so happy that you could take time out of your day to come and educate us on the open web.
Yeah. Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's really been really good.
We definitely appreciate all the work you do at Opera and Opera as a company. When a few years ago I was working in Southern California and I went to, I forget which event it was, Web App Summit, I think, in Newport. And Molly Holschlag was speaking. Mm-hmm. She was working in Opera at the time, and she gave me this red Opera bag that said Open Web on the side, or One Web. It said One Web. Mm-hmm. And I didn't keep the bag, but I ripped out the little One Web thing, and I put it up on my cubicle wall, and it stayed there for years to remind me that the web should be open.
Nice. It's like the punk rock decoration of the open web.
Yes. It was great. All because
excellent.
Of Opera.
So that's good to know.
Bruce, how can people contact you if they want to harass you?
Well, if they want to harass me about nice things, I'm Bruce L on Twitter, or my personal website is brucelawson.co.uk. If they want to contact me with like hate mail or paternity suits, just don't really.
If you want to contact Bruce about paternity suits, send email to steve.hickey@freshtiltsail.com.
Watch it there.
Here at Fresh Tilled Soil, we have an apprenticeship program.
Yep. We have a deadline coming up on December 15th. You can apply at freshtilledsoil.com/AUX. Very simple application process. And if you come through, you can join us next year for 3 or 4 months to upgrade your job.
Good. Okay. So you can get us on Twitter at The Dirt Show, and please send your long-winded comments to thedirt@freshtilledsoil.com. Please review us on iTunes or wherever you're listening to us now. Unless you're driving, please don't review us while you drive, because I care that you're safe, and I will forego all your 5-star reviews as long as you're safe. Once again, thank you very much, Bruce Lawson, for coming on the show. This was outstanding.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, listeners.
And that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening, and we will try and do better next time. Shut the fuck up.